That is the sound you never want to hear. It is the sound of a warning siren going off at a nuclear power plant. But whether you can hear that sound or not, we are all in the Nuclear Hot Seat. Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly podcast keeping you up to date on all things anti-nuclear. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. So I take this nuclear stuff really personally. Today's interview is with Yastel Yamada, president of the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima. This is the group that came together after Fukushima happened, proposing that senior citizens work on the cleanup in order to decrease radiation doses received by younger workers. Listen to what Mr. Yamada has to say about the intra-Japanese politics surrounding the nuclear plant, graft, and censorship. We'll have that in a few minutes. Today is Tuesday, November 6, 2012, and here is the week's nuclear news. First, a Hurricane Sandy update. When Superstorm Sandy hit the East Coast, it forced three nuclear reactors to shut down, including the Indian Point 3 plant along the banks of the Hudson, about 25 miles north of New York City. Four more nuclear plants reduced their output as a precaution. At the nation's oldest nuclear plant, the Oyster Creek facility, about 33 miles north of Atlantic City, operators faced wind, a rising tide, and a storm surge that sent more water than normal into the plant's water intake system. At the same time, the plant, which was already down for maintenance, lost its electrical power from the grid. Operators called an alert, which escalated the plant to halfway up the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's four-level notification scale. Arne Gunderson, engineer for the nonprofit Fairwinds Energy Education Corp, told Bloomberg that if Oyster Creek had been operating, floodwaters just 6 inches higher could have knocked out pumps and caused a disaster. Arne said, "There's something called a PNO out, a preliminary notice of occurrence, and the NRC has said that the normal shutdown cooling and fuel pool cooling were both lost at Oyster Creek, and also that there was a loss of off-site power. So what that means is the nuclear fuel pool started to heat up." A spokesman for the plant's operator, Exelon, called Arne Gunderson's comments unequivocally false. But David Lockbaum, a former nuclear plant engineer who directs the nuclear safety project at the Union of Concerned Scientists, said, "I disagree with Exelon's statement that Arne was unequivocally false. It's precisely that kind of closed, narrow-mindedness that allowed Fukushima to happen." Lockbaum warned that if future events become more severe, under-designed protections might fail. And if operators aren't able to connect temporary equipment in flooding, there's another nuclear disaster. Indeed. Now there's another storm, a nor'easter that is bearing down on the Northeast. It's not as strong as Superstorm Sandy, but coming on the heels of that emergency, we have no idea what the impact is going to be from this storm. This is either total numbnuts or just capitalism at its most whacked out. Welcome to the world's most bizarre theme park, built around an abandoned nuclear power station. Wunderland, near Kalkar, Germany, cleverly combines a never-been-used multi-million-dollar reactor with classic fair rides, including a merry-go-round, Ferris wheel, carousel, and log flume. A swing ride has even been fitted inside the old cooling tower, while a 130-foot-high climbing wall is featured on the outside, which also is cheerfully painted with a Swiss Alps motif. When it was originally built in 1979, the construction was destined to be the world's most technologically advanced nuclear power plant and Germany's first fast breeder nuclear reactor. But after 12 years and more than 3 million pounds later, the project was eventually canceled after a series of public protests and nuclear disasters elsewhere, including Chernobyl. It's a good thing it never went online, or the people in that cooling tower would really be at risk. Meanwhile, after dark, no word if it glows by itself. This word from a special issue of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, "The German Nuclear Exit" is its title. This special issue shows that the nuclear shutdown and an accompanying move towards renewable energy in Germany are already yielding measurable economic and environmental benefits,
with one top expert calling the German phase-out a probable game-changer for the nuclear industry worldwide. From your mouth to somebody in power's ears. Highlights from this special issue include the nuclear phase-out and accompanying shift to renewable energy have brought financial benefits to farmers, investors, and small businesses. Electric utilities are unlikely to succeed in suing the government over the phase-out. From 1990 to 2011, the country's energy supply and carbon dioxide emissions dropped even as its gross domestic product rose by 36%. Germany now produces 50% of energy from solar during midday hours, which is the equivalent to 20 nuclear power stations at full capacity, and this without leaving behind any radioactive waste. Out of Japan, a whole series of articles. First, the numbnuts of the week, the royal numbnuts of the week. Tsunekazu Takeda is current president of the Japanese Olympic Committee. His great-grandfather was the Emperor Meiji. In an interview with DPA on November 1st, he said of Fukushima Daiichi, "No one died. No one got injured from this event. No one." He stresses that Fukushima is no longer a problem. No one is worried about the tsunami or radiation. Meanwhile, the mayor of Futaba, Katsutaka Itagawa, speaking before the Japanese House of Councilors, as reported by Fukushima Diary, said, "Our town citizens report that they tried to have exposure tests at several hospitals, but they are all stopped by Fukushima Medical University." In a related story, also from Fukushima Diary, a Mrs. Shima had thyroid tests taken at a government hospital of both of her children, but the tests revealed that neither her daughter nor her son had thyroid cysts. She went to a private hospital to seek a second opinion and was told that her daughter, in fact, does have thyroid cysts. A friend of hers, a Mrs. Kano, had two children who were both found to have no thyroid cysts, again in the government-sponsored test. When she went to the private hospital Mrs. Shima had recommended for a second opinion, she was told that the hospital had received a directive from the national government telling them to stop providing tests for children that the government hospital had already deemed had no thyroid cysts, and she was refused a second set of tests. So what Japan is setting up is planned deniability, because if no data is taken, there can be no proof and no blame. According to filmmaker Kazui Morizono of Women of Fukushima, as a result of the meltdowns in Fukushima, children cannot play outside. Families are breaking up, and women are even having abortions for fear of genetic damage to their unborn children. Hope is hard to come by in Fukushima. Back to Mayor Itagawa, this according to Informable, he said, "There are some people who speak as if the accident has been contained, but the reality is the contrary. Although we had unwanted exposure to the radiation, we never heard any apology from anyone. The feeling I have will never be cleared, and this is an unforgivable murderer's act." So going back to Japan's Prince Takeda, it looks like you're a total numbnuts. And whatever you are smoking, drinking, snorting, or maybe it's just your head up your posterior, get over it and listen to your people. More news out of Japan, none of it good. Tokyo Bay is showing levels of cesium even higher than levels reported off Fukushima. Nearly the entire seafloor is estimated to be contaminated by 2014. Now, Tokyo Bay is where ashes are dumped after radioactive rubble from Fukushima has been transported to other cities around Japan and incinerated. Japan's governmental death wish in action. And a fault running under the Ui nuclear plant in Fukui Prefecture is definitely active, according to an expert on a Nuclear Regulation Authority panel investigating the compound's safety. Toyo University professor Mitsuhisa Watanabe is calling for the immediate halt of two reactors at the plant, the only nuclear facility reactivated since the Fukushima disaster last year. Watanabe said, "It is certain there is an active fault. Operations should be stopped, and another investigation should be conducted." Japan's largest cigarette maker has canceled the purchase of tobacco leaves from Fukushima after they were found to be contaminated with elevated levels of radiation. Japan Tobacco says routine checks of dried tobacco leaves from Fukushima have revealed that some of the crop is contaminated with radioactive cesium above the company's safety limit. First of all, they have a safety limit on radioactive cesium? How about zero? And then, of course, there's the ultimate irony that the tobacco from Fukushima is too dangerous for the tobacco industry. This is a numbnuts, too. The United Nations has endorsed recommendations for Japan to improve human rights records and cites nuclear contamination. Among their statements, they said that Japan has not taken the necessary legislative, administrative, and other measures to protect the right to life, survival, and development, the right to health, and the right to play of the children of Fukushima. It stated that Japan should make appropriate compensation health treatment for radiation risks for children of Fukushima and their families. And it also criticized information campaigns promoted immediately after the Fukushima disaster, aimed at reducing the concern about the radiation exposure to children. Did you catch that, Princey? Let's move on to this week's interview. Less than a month after the Fukushima Daiichi disaster began on March 11th of 2011, concerned citizens around the world were touched and moved by the offer of retired Japanese engineers to voluntarily replace younger workers in the recovery process. This initial offer evolved into the group Skilled Veterans Corp for Fukushima. Today's interview is with one of the group's founders and its current president. I'm talking with Yastel Yamada, who is the president of Skilled Veterans Corp for Fukushima. This is the group of engineers and other concerned citizens in Japan who stepped forward after Fukushima. The core statement of this group is: accident remedial work should be carried out as a national project whereby people of the senior population, in lieu of younger workers, would undertake work that involves radiation. In other words, that senior citizens would take the place of younger workers in order that they would have a greater future ahead of them. Mr. Yamada, welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you very much.
First of all, how did this idea come about, and what, if anything, was your involvement in the development of this concept?
There is no special one, but it's quite simple issue that the elder people has much less risk by the radiation than the younger people. That's a very simple reason why I proposed that.
How successful has the group been in actually placing people such as yourself?
Now, we are not accepted by TEPCO and government. Therefore, we are proposed but not realized their appeal.
Why is it that there has been resistance to you by TEPCO and the government?
The government said that they appreciate our proposal, but just the government is asking to TEPCO to consider about us, nothing more. They don't want to move by themselves. And then TEPCO says that they have no room to accept us, even though there are 2,000 or 3,000 workers at the site, but TEPCO doesn't have a room to accept.
Can you give us a sense as to the kind of management structure there is? There's TEPCO and the government, but what does it take to actually get workers on the ground?
There is a multi-layered subcontracting structure there, and there are 3,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 workers are daily working, but there are 400 companies involved in this contract, subcontract system. Number of layers is said there is 7 or 8 layers, and at the bottom, there are so many scattered groups are there at the site. And TEPCO is not able to manage those groups. That's the reason why TEPCO cannot accept us.
You spoke earlier when we were talking privately about the fact that there's also a financial aspect to all of these different subcontractors that keeps the structure in place.
Yes, layer by layer, they pick the money as the so-called management fee. Therefore, if TEPCO pays for one day work $200, then finally workers actually get less than $100. More than half of the money picked out between or in between.
So in other words, the subcontractors are each skimming, they're taking the top layer off before they actually get to the point where workers are being paid to do the work.
That's right. Therefore, they are profitees. They don't want to give up their position. And it is very hard to restructure such a substructure.
What about local government in Fukushima or in Fukushima Prefecture? Is there any chance that they can provide pressure or provide any kind of guidance for TEPCO, for the workers, for whatever needs to be done at Fukushima?
Local government is also received many profits or big money due to the nuclear power plant. Now, when the nuclear power plant is installed, before the installing the plant, the big money moves. And then the plant is operated, then year by year, money is supplied at the local government. Therefore, they are very much, let me say, contaminated by the money. One of the citizens in the Okuma town, which is just beside the Fukushima Daiichi, and Congress chairman said that to clean up the Fukushima Daiichi after the disaster, there is the millions of money business comes up. It's a very happy.
Now, you've been to the United States twice. This is your second tour here. What have you been doing and what have you hoped to accomplish?
Let me say that the reaction to my speech in United States is stronger than in Japan, unfortunately.
Why is that?
I'm not very sure, but the United States people are much more free than the politics or government or surrounding opinion. And therefore, I'm very much impressed that having the voice from United States, we would be able to activate the Japanese movement. That is my hope. Therefore, I'm intending to make the tour next spring in Europe.
How successful do you think it has been getting the word from the speeches you've done here in the United States and some of the media coverage that you've received? How much of that do you think has actually gotten back to Japan?
It's very, very hard to say. We are facing very traditional or very deeply implemented in the society. Therefore, we need long time, not 1 year or 2 years like that. Therefore, we have to continue our action or activities with the long-term view. That's very essential. Therefore, I can't say that there would be direct influence or the effects by my tour in the United States. It's a just small one step.
Where do you live in Japan? Are you from Fukushima?
No, I'm living in Tokyo.
How long after the disaster did it take before you felt moved to volunteer?
We came to the idea within 10 days or some after the disaster. And we discussed how we can spread our voice. And by the end of March, we have almost come to the conclusion that by my name, not the group, we will deliver or spread our voice. And on 10th April, I have sent out emails and so on.
What has been the response, other than TEPCO and the government, what has been the response in Japan to the existence of this group and the offer that you have made?
Actually, I have almost no complaint or disagreement to my or our appeal. most of the people accept and welcome and wants to contribute to our activities. Therefore, at this moment, we have, say, 680 volunteer members and 1,600 supporters, very well accepted by the people.
So with you and the others unable to actually work at Fukushima, I see that you are here raising people's consciousness, giving speeches, giving presentations. What are the other members of the group doing until they can actually get on site with the plant?
Now, we have several side activities. One is that the residents want to come back after disaster, how we measure the radiation.
Mm.
And sometimes we clean up their places and so on. Such activity we have started. And simultaneously, we are working for the petition to the government on the web and also on the street. Some more activities to set up the conference all over Japan several times.
If you were to be successful with the work that you are doing, what would that look like?
We are not the special the group to have, which have the special technology like that. We just want to help, nothing more. Therefore, at any place where one person is requested or can work, for example, someone have the license to operate the crane, then he may work there. And someone doesn't have any license, any capability, then he may work just the watch the activities. We have no specific subject items to work.
The people who are in your group, are they engineers? Are they skilled workers? Or do they come from an entire range?
No, we have some veterans, technicians, engineers, former engineers or scientists, and one third who have no special knowledge or capability.
And if there were anything you would want to say to the listeners of Nuclear Hot Seat, a message from you to them, keeping in mind that they're mostly the activist community and people who are motivated to step forward and help,
mm-hmm.
What would you want to tell them, either from yourself, from the people of Japan?
And our group is just focusing on the cleanup of the Fukushima Daiichi, nothing more. And there are several persons who have the different opinions. Of course, as you know, in Japan at this moment, 70-80% of the people wanting to close the nuclear power. Therefore, that ratio may be reflected in our group as the organization. We don't have any single opinion about the nuclear power itself. Therefore, I can't say anything as the representative of the group.
So it seems that your group really is focused on cleaning up Fukushima Daiichi, no matter what the government's policy is towards nuclear.
We are wanting to accept, to request that the TEPCO to accept. But actually, TEPCO doesn't have the capability to work out for 40, 50 years because they are just the operating company, not the construction company. It's a very much different job to operate and to construct. Therefore, we are proposing that the Fukushima Daiichi should be taken out from TEPCO and form the national project, and government should be responsible for the progress and content of the work by government itself. That is our proposal or request. And under that structure, we would be able to work together with other younger people.
It is my hope with all my heart that you have the opportunity to do that and perhaps make the necessary difference in the attitude of the Japanese government and help the Japanese people and help us all get out of this mess.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Yamada. That was Nuclear Hot Seat's interview with Yasutel Yamada, a founder and now president of the Skilled Veterans Corps for Fukushima. Here's a final thought. Today is the presidential election, so I expect no one will be listening to this podcast until after the results are determined, or the lawsuits begin to be filed over contested results in swing states. The one sure thing is that whoever wins will be in favor of, if not a total booster, of nuclear energy. That's because nuclear invests wisely and widely in politicians all over this country, especially presidential candidates. That's why there's no electoral quick fix, no Green Party President Jill Stein, at least not this time around. Politics will not take down nuclear. The media will not take down nuclear. Witness last week when Superstorm Sandy muscled 8 nuclear power facilities into diminished power production, emergency scram shutdowns, 4 unusual events, and 1 alert, and the media barely noticed. The only thing that will take nuclear down and out for the count is people. You. Me. Whoever we know who we can motivate into action. So whether you are cheering or sobbing at the results of the election, if you're against nuclear, the beat goes on. Unchanged, unchanging, until we create the change to genuinely safe, sane, sustainable green energy. Either that, or get done in by a nuclear, oops, that's 4th from the lowest on the NRC's rating level. P.S. The only time that was used in the United States was 3 Mile Island. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, November 6, 2012. You can find our episodes posted on the nuclearhotseat.com website. Do a /blog on that or click on the blog tab. You can also find us regularly on Facebook Nuclear Hot Seat pages, iTunes podcast, and now you can finally follow us on Twitter. Share us, link to us, forward us, put us on posters, send us out in snail mail, any way you can get out the word. This podcast is the activist voice on nuclear issues, so use us as the resource we are. And if you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. This is Libby Halevi of Heartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that we've all had our nuclear wake-up call. Now, do not go back to sleep.